Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of the Count of Mostly Crisco to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're taking another look at this week is the argument from popularity, also known as argumentum ad populum and the bandwagon fallacy. The Count of Mostly Crisco. That's very good.
Yeah, we are going back to our, I think this was episode seven?
Six or seven.
One of the very early ones.
So that's the one where we had Kaplan and Messiah doing their song. Yeah.
And there you go, yeah. So much time has passed since then.
Much time has passed.
Yeah. A whole other presidency.
Yes, jeepers. Yeah.
And it hasn't got any better. Everything's all shit. If anything, it's worse.
People are still doing this unashamedly.
It feels like we're not helping. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Do you think it's a bit of spit of the Streisand effect? You think that's what's happening? Yeah. But people are just going, oh, actually, I've never used that one. I'm going to use that one from now on. Yeah.
Maybe that's happening with the new ones we come up with.
Oh, now that would be a good thing to check.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. See if they're occurring more frequently. So, the argument for popularity. This is a fairly well-known one, fairly common one, and it is when people use the popularity of an idea, the number of people who believe an idea or think a thing, as evidence for its truth over using actual evidence that would be
truth
reliable.
And evidence. Yeah. If anybody cared to look at it, most people could see was accurate.
Yeah. So for our first Trump example, we actually go back to the January of his first term when he was asked by David Muir on ABC what evidence he had for the 5 million illegal votes that he claimed were in his favor.
House Speaker Paul Ryan has said, I have seen no evidence. I have made this very, very clear. Senator Lindsey Graham saying it's the most inappropriate thing for a president to say without proof. He seems obsessed with the idea that he could not have possibly lost the popular vote without cheating and fraud. I want to ask you about something bigger here. Does it matter more now?
There's nothing bigger.
But it is important because
Just tell you, you know what's important? Millions of people agree with me when I say that. If you would have looked on one of the other networks and all of the people that were calling in, they're saying, we agree with Mr. Trump, we agree. They're very smart people.
Let me just ask you. You did win. You're the president. You're sitting across from me right now.
That's true.
Do you think that your words matter more now?
Yes, very much.
Do you think that talking about millions of illegal votes is dangerous to this country
without
presenting the
evidence? Not at all, because many people feel the same way that I do.
Wow. Yep. He's layering on the appeals, isn't he?
Yeah,
wow.
Millions of people agree with him and many people feel the same way he does about it. So that's enough. It doesn't matter if
many people have said
no evidence for it. And even prominent Republicans are saying there's no evidence. I've seen no evidence for this and it's really irresponsible for him to keep saying it.
So. And several, as we know, several investigations into it found far fewer than 5 million illegal votes. They found some illegal votes.
Yep.
Turned out they were for Trump. They were Republicans doing the illegals. Yeah. Yeah. And some of those in the second term, some of those illegal votes were generated by Trump or attempted to be generated by him. Ringing up and saying, I just need 17,000 votes.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the fact that, well, I'm not even going to call it a fact. That if it were true that many people felt the same way as he did and millions of people agreed with him, that isn't a basis for whether it's true or not. And it isn't true.
No. Given the fact that we know that when he says many people have said, it isn't many people have said.
No.
It's been said many times by him, generally. When he calls upon him, say, does the accelerated truth thing, when he calls upon the evidence of his own evidence, many people have said it's all over Twitter. Yeah, it's you doing it. It's you're the one that's doing it. And it,
yeah, he perpetuates
it. It doesn't count. Yeah.
And the only reason people, the only reason any large number of people believe it is because it's something he says and they are prepared to believe what he says, bizarrely, despite all evidence to the contrary. So for our second example, we go much more up to date. And this was his debate with Kamala Harris.
People can't go out and buy cereal or bacon or eggs or anything else. The people of our country are absolutely dying with what they've done. They've destroyed the economy. And all you have to do is look at a poll. The polls say 80 and 85 and even 90% that the Trump economy was great, that their economy was terrible.
That's not how you measure economy, by asking people.
Yeah.
Unless the people
you think it was great
are economists.
Yeah. And not the economists that Dinesh D'Souza calls on. Yeah.
No.
Actual economists.
I mean, again, if that was true, it wouldn't be how you do it. It wasn't true.
Yeah.
Because they did polls. Yeah. There was, like, this was in October of 2024.
Yeah.
So there's usually quite a lot of polling going on during that period. And they were asking people about the economy because it was one of the big things that Trump was talking about on the campaign trail. And it was about 45% of people who said that they thought the Trump economy was good and that they were kind of voting for him based on the economy. And a roughly similar number of people, 45, 46%, were saying that they thought the Biden economy was good and that's why they were voting for Harris. And objectively, the Biden economy was far, far better than the Trump economy.
Yeah.
You know, record period of job growth and the stock market was way higher and all of the other things that we've talked about in the past.
Yeah,
which economists say
measure.
Yeah, this was much, much better.
As how the economy is great or not. Yeah.
So in the face of all that, you can't just go, but everyone thinks it.
Yeah, and then, and then to take the polls and then just to say, without justification, go from 80 to 90.
Yeah.
80%, 85%. 90%.
Well, if you're going to lie big.
Well, you might as well,
why not?
Yes, here's a poll. I'm going to make up this number, and then my voice in my head is saying, well, that number's not big enough. Make up another one. Then that contradicts the other voice said, no, that's still not high enough. Just, you know, you've got to stop short of everyone, because it wouldn't be a poll otherwise. It would just be a fascist dictatorship. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
But that's his... His internal appeal to popularity is when he says 80, he's like, yeah, but it'd be more convincing if it was bigger than that, wouldn't it? It would be truer if more people believed it.
Yeah, more people. It would be
say 90.
It would be truer.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it, isn't it? It would be truer. That's the more people you can, I was going to say legitimately there, but it's not. It's the more people you just say believe a thing, the truer the thing that they believe that you say they believe in becomes.
Yeah.
That's the entire fallacy in a quite overblown nutshell.
Yeah. So our third example actually comes from a news story from the last couple of days that almost made it into the headline section. But because there's an appeal to popularity or an argument from popularity involved, I thought I would put it here instead, basically.
Yeah.
Which is back in 2022, Utah Governor Spencer Cox was one of the rare Republican governors who was saying that he thought transgender kids should have access to healthcare, gender-affirming care, because he recognized that it was valuable to them and it reduced harm that they would do themselves. And it was basically, you know, it'd be a nice thing if everyone lived. So that was something that he thought was worth doing.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of a backlash among the Republican base in Utah. And in line with a lot of other Republican states, red states, they kind of outlawed it a bit. And he went along with it, having previously tried to veto a bill that would have banned trans athletes on sports teams and things like that. But what they did was they agreed to a medical review, basically, of a study to look at all of the evidence and say whether gender-affirming care for trans kids was a good thing or a bad thing. And then they would revisit the issue.
A bit like the thing that Wes Streeting said would happen over here.
Yeah.
With the access to puberty blocking thing, they said, oh, well, we'll look at that, we'll study that, rather than just go with everybody / J.K. Rowling. really yeah. not liking it.
So yeah. what they did in Utah was that mm-hmm. they put a moratorium on doctors being able to provide puberty blockers and hormone therapy to trans kids
right.
until this review was completed. And then yeah. based on what it said, they would then look at that again. So that review yep. was completed and it was published yep. this week.
Right. Uh-huh.
It found absolutely
it was a good thing.
Completely that gender-affirming care yeah. is a good thing and should be available to everyone. They said the consensus of the evidence supports that the treatments are effective in terms of mental health, psychosocial outcomes, and the induction of body changes consistent with the affirmed gender in pediatric gender dysphoria patients. The evidence also supports that the treatments right. are safe in terms of changes to bone density, cardiovascular risk factors, metabolic changes, and cancer. It's our expert opinion that policies to prevent access to and use of gender-affirming hormone therapy for treatment in pediatric patients cannot be justified based on the quantity or quality of medical science findings or concerns about potential regret in the future, and that high-quality guidelines are available to guide qualified providers in treating pediatric patients who meet diagnostic criteria. So basically, they said, wow. it's all good. There's no downsides. Yeah. It helps people. Yeah. It lowers risks of suicide. Everything about it is good. And this was yeah. a very comprehensive study of it, probably one of the most comprehensive studies of the medical literature on this subject that there has been.
Wow. And they in that report, they dealt with the past, present and future
yes.
of
yes.
Of ongoing care.
Yeah. And everything, everyone wow. going into it was kind of looking at how they were doing it and saying, yes, this is a good study yep. and it's being done well. They're looking at all the right things and we will wait to see what comes out of it.
There's a massive but on the horizon, isn't there?
Yeah.
But.
Because yeah. the mm-hmm. Republican state legislature in Utah has now got this and gone, yeah, we're still going to ban it.
Yeah. See, that's what I think is going to happen in the UK as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
so they
Christ.
Have yep. said, yep. they told the Salt Lake Tribune, young kids and teenagers should not be making life-altering medical decisions based on weak evidence, which is the exact is no opposite of what the
yeah.
medical review
what's
says.
Produced.
But the reason, or one of the reasons they gave to back up why this is the right decision based on the thing they asked for evidence showing all the evidences in the other direction, was Utah was right to lead on this issue and the public agrees. Polls show clear majority support both statewide and nationally. The science isn't there, the risks are real, and the public is with us.
Whoa.
The science is there, the risks aren't real.
No.
And if the public was with them, it wouldn't change the science. But the public isn't even fucking with them because they're lying
right.
about what the polls say too.
Uh-huh.
It's less than one third of US adults favour banning gender affirming care.
Wow.
The majority, pretty much everywhere, certainly nationally, yeah. is in favour.
If that was an election, that would be called a landslide.
Yeah, yeah. absolutely.
Wow.
Almost certainly a higher number than voted in those members of the Republican Utah legislature.
Who are worried about getting in the next time.
They're yeah, claiming yeah. that the public is on their side, the polling is with them. The majority of people believe that it's dangerous and ill-advised. Despite
yeah.
that not being true, and also the science saying it's good.
Wow.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British politics corner.
Not dissimilarly, in another example that Jim had tipped to you for pointing this one out, because you went, fucking hell, look at this. This yeah. is in the wake of the grooming gangs report that Alexis J. undertook over 7 years and then produced a report in 2022, which wasn't acted upon by the, I think the final report came out the day Liz Truss resigned, and it there wasn't acted upon by the Tory party, who commissioned the report into grooming gangs, primarily in the north of England, undeterred by this report, having followed on from a news report from 2011. And it found the evidence to be not what he said it was. Former Reform MP Rupert Lowe, this is the one that called Farage a dictator and was booted out of Reform. He's now running an independent. He appeared on the Newsagent's podcast to talk about the fact that he's calling for an inquiry about Pakistani men involved in grooming gangs, when the overwhelming evidence is that most grooming gangs are white men.
You've launched your own inquiry. Alexis J., who, as you know, spent 7 years on a child abuse probe, says she's very unhappy with the politicisation of child sexual exploitation done, in her words, a very uninformed way.
My driver for the rape gang inquiry is that, having looked into it, and it's something which I think a lot of people in this country probably were blissfully unaware of.
No, I don't think they were. Andrew Norfolk, who is the Times reporter.
That's your opinion. But I have picked up the mantle, and as you know, I don't call them grooming gangs. I call it Pakistani rape gangs.
Yes, you do.
Because 95% of these people are Pakistanis, and very often from a particular part of Pakistan.
That's absolutely not
so,
true.
It is true. But anyway,
let's park that. 224 white grooming gang suspects were found compared to 22 Pakistani suspects. Why do you only talk about the Pakistani grooming gangs? That's police statistics from the Times.
If you look at my rape gang inquiry, 20,000 people have donated about £620,000 now. That shows you the depth of feeling and concern amongst British people.
So, despite the evidence to the exact opposite of 95% of grooming gangs are made up of Pakistani men, no, they're not. 22 versus 224, so they're not. It's not. And she reads out the fact, these are the police statistics. Where else would you go for the statistics other than arrest statistics following the crackdown on this? So there's kind of there's an appeal to the lack of knowledge, a gap in the knowledge, which he is filling by saying a lot of people were blissfully unaware of it. Well, you think that? And she mentions Andrew Norfolk, who actually only died last week. He's the one that broke the story in 2011. And then there were inquiries in 2014, 15, 16, 22 and 24. And also, after having done the report, Alexis J said she was frustrated that 20 of the recommendations to tackle the abuse had not been implemented more than 2 years
which was
later.
All of them,
we knew about
wasn't
it? That.
That was all of the recommendations.
Yeah, all of them. It was all over the news. So Absolutely. A lot of people may well have been blissfully unaware, but the vast majority of people were aware of it.
I mean, I think the thing is, if people missed the last 5 studies that have been done on it, this is probably not a breakthrough, the one he wants to do.
Yes, except it suits his... I don't know why. If he's as an independent, he's standing as an independent now, he hasn't got to be more reformed than Farage, or perhaps he does, in... Let's just reopen the inquiry and go back to the racist basis for it.
Yeah.
And Andrew Norfolk, who broke the story in 2011, even then he was saying it's mostly white men. Even then.
Absolutely. So that's, and anyone who looks into it at all, that's like one of the things that's always there because it is shouted out by people on the right as Pakistani grooming gangs.
Yes.
Every serious article about it makes it very clear that that isn't actually what's going on, that is a dishonest framing of the story.
Yeah, and by the fact that lots of people have funded this inquiry,
just goes to show. I think it's worth shouting out Emily Maitlis, who did a phenomenal job on that, and often does on calling out people who are just lying to her when she's interviewing them. That's what journalism should be.
Yeah.
We'd like more of that, please.
Yeah. Well, we'll get a little bit more of that later on. Not Maitlis, but there is one or two other beacons of journalism out there. Meanwhile, here's Farage himself in 2024 showing the depth of his feeling and concern over reform candidates. So James McMurdoch, who they're talking about, was convicted of assault in 2006. This is 2024 with the candidates lining up to be elected for reform. And he is talked to about this.
James McMurdoch was one of those many candidates who wasn't vetted at all by the party. Look, I didn't know any of this when I took back over as leader.
So you said you're going to put in place the most vigorous vetting system in place now. Do you think James McMurdoch would not go through this new vetting system?
You can have your fun at Sky News. We've got 100,000 members. I've got 1 million followers on TikTok. Dame Andrea Jenkins has just joined us. She's our candidate for Greater Lincolnshire. You've had your fun. I'm off for lunch. Thank you.
Wow.
There you go. So we're going to put this vetting thing in place. So if we put that in, would this guy have got through? Is it me? Or is clearly the answer no? So then the follow-up question would be, would you fire him? They haven't, because he is elected. Is he an MP? No, I think he's a councillor. Anyway, he ran for the office. Don't worry about that, because I've got 1 million followers on TikTok.
Yeah.
And we've got 100,000 members. And weirdly, we don't measure the efficacy of political parties' vetting systems by the number of TikTok followers that they've got. But
so far,
Sky at the time...
So far, we don't.
No, but at the time, Sky had 2.9 million followers on TikTok and now have 8 million.
Yeah.
Nige now has 1.2 million.
Yeah.
I think that says something.
I'm just saying, don't rule it out for the future.
Yeah, we've seen that Black Mirror episode. Yes. Speaking of Farage, in 2023, he said this.
We're regulating our own businesses even more than they were as EU members. Brexit has failed.
So 2023, finally, Farage has given up and said, yeah, Brexit's failed. Thankfully, Starmer this week went to the EU with a deal to kind of reset the relationship, and brought in the deal brought about fewer checks on food and drink exports and imports. The fisheries deal that was about to expire had been rolled over for another 12 years, which was the deal, part of the deal that Boris had oven ready, apparently. A youth exchange and the Erasmus student exchange is set to return for British students. The UK will get access to new EU rearmament financing, and they will also get returned access to DNA and criminal records, as well as fingerprints and vehicle registrations as stolen goods, as far as policing is concerned, and also access to the e-gates in airports for British travellers.
That's so weird, because according to most of the news coverage, Starmer got his ass handed to him by the EU and basically capitulated to everything and didn't do well in the negotiation at all.
No, so, that's right. Yeah. Well, particularly Farage in 23 said Brexit has failed. You would think that this would be a successful way of overturning some of those failures. You'd think that would appeal to reform, but nah. See, the thing is about Farage and reform, what it is that they are hecklers. They're the people that stand at the back of the hall shouting, get off, you're rubbish.
They are the Statler and Waldorf of British politics.
They are. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Man, I'm going to have to go and do an AI Muppet version of. And except trouble is they would make him look like Kermit, because he does. Yes. And instead of just leaving them in the box heckling, they've actually invited him up on stage and said, okay, well, we'll just vote you on stage as an actor. And they're just the hecklers. We should ignore them. So here's Sarah Pochin, newly elected Reform MP for Runcorn and Helsby, talking about the reset.
They are literally defying the will of the British people. And, you know, I know from talking to people, it doesn't matter who you talk to out there, they feel utterly betrayed. And that's the only word, that's the only word for it.
Yeah.
And they're sort of bulldozing this through against the will of the British people.
I think it does matter who you talk to.
Yes, I think it probably does. Yeah, and we'll come to that later. And also the will of the British people. Labour won the last election as voted for by the British people. Because it seems that, you know, the will of the British people was, let's not have the Tories. Poaching was a Tory for a while, till she got offered a post of mayor by Labour, and then she got thrown out of the Tories for doing that. Then she ran as an independent. Then she got suspended from being an independent when she rejoined the Tories to run for leader in 2022. So, you know, she's got the integrity of the policies of every party she's ever stood for running through her veins. And also the will of the people. If you look at a poll that was conducted up to May 2025 from January 2020, the poll question was, in hindsight, do you think Britain was wrong or right to vote to leave the European Union? Currently, it's more than 55% say it was wrong and less than 35% say it was right. So what she's wanting to do is to go back to the referendum from 2016, ignoring the fact that there was a referendum in 1975 that said we should stay in Europe, ignoring the referendum / election in 2024, where the will of the people was expressed in such a direction that didn't include the Conservatives, and the will of the people represented in this poll that said, no, we don't want to do that. Also, leader of her old party and the party responsible for the Brexit that has failed, Kemi Badenoch, says Starmer is not doing the right thing.
We need to make sure that we have a prime minister and a government who are negotiating in our national interests. What I have seen right now is a prime minister who is just trying to get closer to the EU and is giving concessions in the hope that something, anything, can give him a PR moment.
Like a PR moment, like commenting on the EU reset. Or
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And then here, going back to the bit about, I think it does matter who you talk to. Here is Tory Shadow Paymaster General Richard Holden asked on Newsnight by Victoria Derbyshire if, in opposing Starmer's deal, which they do vociferously, the naturally, Tories are still the party of business.
Would you say the Conservative Party are still the party of business?
They certainly are. And I'd also
before
say...
Before you go on, the reason I ask is because on today's deal, the Federation of Small Businesses like the deal, the CBI likes the deal, the British Chambers of Commerce like it, the Food and Drink Federation like it, UK Hospitality likes it, Salmon Scotland likes it, the British Meat Processors Association likes it, Morrison Supermarket likes it. Are they all wrong?
Beautifully done.
There you go. Nice. Yeah. So it does matter who you talk to out there. So, yes, when you kind of say the British people, it's obvious that you're choosing the subset of the British people who agree with you, who tell you the thing that you want to hear.
1, 2, 3, 4. Power to the people. Power to the people. Power to the people. Power to the people, right on. Say you've reached the sound conclusion. You might want to check your causality. When your argument's poor, just go out the door singing power to the people.
John Lennon there with Power to the People.
And in the Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the Fallacy of the Week from a non-political perspective. And we don't have any Friends examples this week, which is a bit unusual.
Oh,
but
man,
we do have a Tampax ad. And if that sounds like a weird link,
because this is
the ad that Courtney Cox did
well
before Friends, where she became the first person to say period on American TV.
Do you change your life for 1 week because of that time of the month? Still using pads? Then let me tell it to you straight. Tampax can change the way you feel about that time. Tampax tampons protect differently than a pad, so you feel cleaner. And feeling cleaner is more comfortable. Plus, more women use Tampax than any other tampon or pad. Now that's something. Remember, there's a feeling with Tampax. It can actually change the way you feel about your period.
Yeah. More women use Tampax
than any other product.
Yeah, so that's something.
Yep.
Yeah, an argument from popularity. That's what that is.
That's the something that is.
Yeah. Which is unsurprising because this is incredibly common in advertising. Because in a way, it's a form of social proof before social media existed or kind of reviews or something like that you would get online.
Yep.
The idea that many people do this thing makes you think, oh, well, it must be a good thing to do then.
Must be a good thing.
And that's why McDonald's say 11 billion sold or whatever they say. And you think, oh, that must be pretty good.
Tunnocks tea cakes. Yeah. Or no, what's it, the Tunnocks caramel
wafer
thing?
Yeah.
Are they, you know, 40
super
million
popular? Are they?
Sold a day. Well, it says 40 million made every day or sold every day.
Can't be made. Every day? 40 million?
Every
Tunnocks.
Day? No, it's not that.
No.
Yeah. Tunnocks wafers. Yeah, caramel
Still.
Wafers.
I mean, I know they're very popular, but that's a lot.
That is a lot. Well, you know, I could probably eat that many.
But do you every day?
Well, yeah, it would explain a lot.
And so our next example is another advert.
Uh-huh.
And this time it's for Chase Bank in the UK.
Yeah.
Voiced by David Tennant.
So who are you again?
Chase. We're a digital bank that's already trusted by millions of customers in the US.
How many billions?
Well, over 56 millions.
Blimey.
Yeah, so the person who isn't currently with Chase is a bit sceptical when David Tennant says millions of people trust them.
Yeah.
until he says it's 56 million. Oh, that's quite a lot of millions. So in that case, they're probably trustworthy.
Yeah.
You know, that many people can't be wrong, can they?
Well, quite. Here we go. The company's packaging
for
caramel wafers states that 6 million are produced and sold weekly.
Weekly. So that's quite
wrong. How many millions?
Quite a lot less than 40 million a day, which did seem like a lot.
Yeah, I think they've had to scale it back latterly because of health concerns.
Sure.
But yeah, it's somewhat less convincing now. Now that we've gone down from 40 million a day to 6 million.
Yeah, they must be rubbish.
Yes. Whereas Chase Bank,
selling 7
how many millions? Oh, yeah. 56. Wow.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying Chase aren't trustworthy. I'm just saying that the fact that 56 million people in the US trust them, frankly,
yeah,
I don't know which 56 million that is.
Yeah.
There's at least 56 million Americans I don't trust.
Yeah.
If it happens to be in that portion of Americans, it's not a good endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So our final example in this section is from The Case for Christ, which is a dramatization of a book by Lee Strobel, who was a journalist who claimed to be an atheist, who looked into the evidence for Christianity and was convinced by it and came out of the whole process a Christian.
As a result of the evidence he found.
He was lying in the beginning of that process. He was not an atheist. He was already a pastor in a church. But, you know, the book sold well and they made a film of it. This is part of his journey where he's talking to a priest.
To date, archaeologists have recovered 5,843 Greek New Testament manuscripts. That's four times as many as the Iliad.
Really?
The earliest fragment of the Gospel of John was found in ancient Egypt, and it dates to 2nd century AD.
How close is that to the original?
Less than 30 years. I have one of the fragments in my collection. It's quite a treasure, isn't it? Uh-huh. After the New Testament and the Iliad, the runners-up don't even come close. We only have 100 copies of Sophocles, 7 copies of Plato's Tetralogies, and only 5 copies of anything by Aristotle. In fact, if you laid the surviving copies of Aristotle one on top of the other, they would make barely 4 feet. You do the same with surviving copies of the New Testament, the stack would be a mile high. Nothing else in history even comes close. How is that for reliable?
I think that's a really weird measure of reliability.
Yeah, that there were lots of copies. So
they found 5,843 Greek New Testament manuscripts. Yep. So therefore, God's real.
It. Yes,
it's bizarre. This priest character, who is a made-up person, he isn't one of the people that Lee Strobel talked to when he actually did this, his journey to Christ. Because basically, the people he talked to were just evangelical priests. And
who had already convinced of it.
Yeah, none of them were like historians or skeptics or any of any kind. And it was just, the entire book was like, that feeds my confirmation bias, I now believe.
Yeah.
And so for the film, they made up a couple of extra people who were like, well, we can give you some actual evidence. And this was the level of their actual evidence. Was the number
that we just found lots of copies of.
But the thing is, in his defense, this fictional priest, part of the reason, and he has a bit of a monologue about this before, part of the reason he's talking about the number is he's saying that with textual criticism, what you want to do is for an old historical document, is you want to compare different copies of it so that you know what the original said, basically. Because, you know, you don't know what the earliest copies of it said, which are, and the earliest ones theoretically would be closest to the truth. You know, they'd be the ones that were written closest to the event actually happening. And so by comparing copies to each other, if they match up with the earliest version, then if you've got multiple ones that match up, then probably the earliest version is more likely to be accurate, I guess, or an accurate retelling of the story. You know, it hasn't been retold differently over time. It stays the same. And if you've got, you know, thousands of different copies of it, and they agree with each other, then it increases the reliability.
Well, except that if the first one doesn't tell the truth...
Spot on. Immediately you've spotted the flaw in the argument. Immediately.
But that, yeah.
If the first one was a lie,
retold the thing without.
Doesn't matter how many copies
it.
You've got. Yeah.
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 And the fact that they could only find 7 versions of Aristotle.
Yeah.
So there's kind of historical.
Apart from anything else, Aristotle wasn't telling histories. His stuff was mostly about how we think and what we should think about and all of that
and
stuff.
How we should behave.
How we should talk and rhetoric and how governments should be. Yes. So you're absolutely right in that if all of them agreed. And they agreed with a thing that wasn't true. That doesn't make that thing more true. That's a great point.
Yeah.
One of the things that they don't mention in the film or the book is that they don't agree. They really, really don't agree on much at all. Of all of the things they have. Plus, calling them 5,843 Greek New Testament manuscripts massively overstates how much text there is in each one. Most of them are fragments, like sometimes just literally a tiny torn part of a page.
Yeah.
There is agreement among them, but there's also disagreement among them. And the thing is, Strobel, particularly in his branch of Christianity that he decides is true, he follows the New International Version of the Bible, not the King James Version. And that doesn't agree with almost all, 90% of the Greek New Testament texts, which in large part support the King James Version, but not the version that he decides is the real one. So it's not even valid for the thing he's trying to say it's valid for. It's mad. Yeah. It's a terrible way of deciding whether a thing was true or not, because if thousands of people copied the first Harry Potter book, it wouldn't make that true. Even if they copied it really well and almost entirely agreed with it. It's basically like fan fiction at this stage, the different texts that they've got of the New Testament. Just because there's lots of them means it was popular, not means it was true.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out 3 Trump quotes, 2 of which are real and 1 I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
I think if you were to ask the majority of people, they would surely all say that it's been worth each of them investing so much of their money into finding out how clearly it is seen by thousands of those with so many eyes that the wishes of the large percentage of the population all agree that the scoring system is biased in the favour of the national interest.
Yeah, I can't argue with that.
No.
I think they would all agree, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that proves it.
That makes it all the more truer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this selection is from the meeting that Trump had in the Oval Office with Mark Carney, the Canadian Prime Minister.
Yes, yes.
And it has nothing to do with Canada or Mark Carney in any way, because he went off on a bit of a tangent about Obama's presidential library.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which has been a bit delayed by construction overruns and slightly ballooned budget. And Trump, being a master builder, said that he could have done it better, basically.
Of course.
Statement number one, President Obama, and if he wanted help, I'd give him help because I'm a really good builder and I build on time, on budget. He's building his library in Chicago. It's a disaster. And he said something to the effect, I only want DEI, I only want woke. He wants woke people to build it. Well, he got woke people and they have massive cost overruns. The job is stopped. I don't know. It's a disaster.
Okay.
Statement number two.
Right.
And I don't like that's happening because I think it's bad for the presidency that a thing like that should happen. He's got a library that's a disaster, and he wanted to be very politically correct, and he didn't use good, hard, tough, mean construction workers that I love, Marco. I love those construction workers, but he didn't want construction workers. He wanted people that, never did it before.
Mm, okay, yeah. But a bit like he has never done that before? Yeah.
And statement number three.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If he had people who knew what they were doing, it would be finished. And they would have done it for a tenth of the price, believe me. A friend of mine in Chicago, very successful guy, really a top guy. If I said his name, you'd know it. He saw how much it was costing. He said, that's crazy. That can't be right. I've built huge hotels for less, and they were, let me tell you, they were the best you've ever seen.
Okay. Yeah, because the fact that he's telling us that they're the best you've ever seen is all we need to know. Yeah, that's yes. Many people are saying the truth of it. Many people are saying, okay. Well, my gut is that 1 and 3 you made up both of them. So is he going to have said out loud he wants woke people? We got woke people. It's a bit of a tell that there's disaster in 2 of them, which makes you think that 1 of them is real. But which one? And then also the one without disaster. And that whole thing of, if I said his name, you'd know it. He loves doing that. Really top guy. And if I said his name, you know, and if you asked me, I'd have to make up a name. If you want any help, I'll give you. Does he really say I don't want? Okay, so either the one that's toned down, which is 2, is the one that you made up, or the one that's outrageously DEI and woke. No, is he going to have said that? And he calls him Marco in that one. So many difficult choices. Oh, no! Right, okay, on the basis of the Marco and that I want him to say woke people, I'm going to say 2 is the one you made up.
Okay, so you started out by saying you think I made up 1 and 3, and now you've gone
and
for
2. And now I've gone for 2. I know. Okay.
So if the other 2, which are you more convinced by?
More convinced by the friend of mine in Chicago, very successful guy, really top guy, 3.
Okay, and 3 is fake news.
Whoa! No way. So that means the other 2 are real. My
that
God.
Is what that means, yes.
No.
So.
Oh, well, that's very good. Very good. Bloody hell. I thought that can't be right. 2 disasters. No, he said both of those in the.
He did.
In the same thing. Oh, what?
Here is 1.
President Obama, and if he wanted help, I'd give him help because I'm a really good builder and I build on time, on budget. He's building his library in Chicago. It's a disaster. And he said something to the effect, I only want DEI, I only want woke. He wants woke people to build it. Well, he got woke people, and they have massive cost overruns. The job is stopped. I don't know. It's a disaster.
Yeah, because Obama would say that. Just give me woke.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just picture that, can't you, Obama saying, I only want DEI, I only want woke.
I only want woke people. Yeah.
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 He also said...
And he went on to say exactly the same thing.
And I don't like that happening because I think it's bad for the presidency that a thing like that should happen. He's got a library that's a disaster. And he wanted to be very politically correct, and he didn't use good, hard, tough, mean construction workers that I love, Marco. I love those construction workers. But he didn't want construction workers. He wanted people that, like, never did it before.
And I think he said disaster about 3 more times after that as well.
Yeah. Gives away his slightly homoerotic tendencies, doesn't he?
Oh, he loves those construction workers.
Good, hard, tough, mean construction workers. I love them. I love them. No wonder he's got YMCA in his bloody playlist. Yeah. Give me those mean, tough, hard construction workers.
He loves them.
I love him, Marco. And he called him Marco, for fuck's sake.
I think he wasn't on camera, but I think Marco Rubio might have been in the room. I don't know why.
Okay.
I guess
not
he's
Marco
Secretary
Carney.
Of State, isn't he? Right. So maybe he was there for the Mark Carney thing. But yeah, he wasn't, I don't think, talking directly to Mark Carney at that point. But if he had called Mark Carney Marco, that would have been quite amusing.
That would have been good, yeah. Well, that's, Wow.
Yeah. So
okay, so the other one, excellent.
The other one was,
which is kind of, you know, it's quite tame, but it's got all the tells in.
Incidentally, the Obama Presidential Center in Chicago wasn't shut down, the construction of it. It's been ongoing the whole time. It has had a kind of ballooning of the initial cost that they had put into it, but they have had donations from people to... to get it done, and the donations have been higher than they thought, and they've added to what they wanted to do with it. And it isn't just a library, it's basically a whole huge community centre in the south side of Chicago, and it's going to massively benefit that neighbourhood in terms of bringing people in and giving the people of that neighbourhood a place to go. It's that there's a library, not just the presidential library, but there's a public library there, there's sports facilities there, there's a big park. The building looks phenomenal. It's going to be a really really great place to go when it's finished. Like, I will at some point go back to Chicago. I will definitely go and visit it because it looks amazing. It's bigger and more expensive than they thought it was going to be, and it has taken longer. There was a small dispute between two of the contractor companies on it that led to a lawsuit. But it was never shut down.
Is it woke because it's not, not just a library? It's not
fucking, no.
I mean, he thinking it's woke because it's actually helping the community do things other than store all his library documents? It's actually providing benefit to the community. They can go there. They can do sports. They can talk to one another. They can integrate.
I think just blaming it on woke is his best chance for calling out Obama, because, you know, he's the kind of guy who would say that kind of stuff, isn't he? But no, it's being built by union construction workers who, especially in Chicago, union construction workers have a particular stereotype. It doesn't usually include wokeness.
No.
That's not how they are portrayed in the media.
Perhaps it's woke because he's actually working with the unions, whereas Trump famously...
Oh, yeah. No, it helps that he's working with the
union buster.
The Chicago Federation of Labor, their president, Bob Reiter, actually responded to these remarks.
Right.
He said, "While understanding President Trump is thin-skinned and emotionally fragile, I feel it's necessary to set the record straight on Chicago's talented and hard-working union construction workers. Donald Trump's wildly inaccurate and offensive rant about the building of the Obama Presidential Center is utterly ridiculous. Chicago's highly trained, highly skilled union construction workers are building this state-of-the-art facility. The job isn't shut down and continues on an aggressive schedule despite Donald Trump's obsession with President Obama."
Wow. So,
yeah.
That's excellent, given that he's thin skinned. Brilliant.
So, we do have a few social contestants on Patreon.
Right.
Anders said, "That run of adjectives followed by Marco Polo in the middle. How can you possibly come up with something like that? You can't. And that's why number two is the one Jim made up." Well played.
yeah. Kind of there with you.
Richard Thunder Hopkins said, "I don't really know. I just want to wish Mark good luck and say hello. P.S. The Republican Party are more despicable than Reform for now." Invisible Unicorn says, "Three has to be fake. It has a long, complete sentence. There's no way that came from the orange blob with toys in the attic."
There you go. Yeah.
Renee Z said, "I think one is real, so maybe two is also real because it's similar. Therefore, I think three is fake news. He's so proud of himself in three, which is typical, but I'm sticking with three as the one Jim created." Yeah.
Good thinking. Yeah.
Kaz2e said, "Well, we have woke, complete disaster, and I could do it again, tenth of the price. All the overused Trumpian bullshit. You've done well this week, Jim. Best of luck, Mark. Guessing number two is fake. May God have mercy on our souls."
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That whole of the doing the two versions of the same thing.
Yeah. And finally, One-Eyed Nick said, "Discussing two things he hates more than anything in the world, a successful black person and libraries. Why do the construction workers need to be mean? Do they build better if they're ill-tempered? All of this garbage is awful and he should feel bad every time he opens his hate hole. I'm going with number one for being fake for literally no reason. I just am."
Yes, it's overblown and awful and can't possibly be true, so therefore it must be.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't feel so bad then for picking the wrong one. Most people, nearly all the people, pick number two. So that makes it right.
Arguably, we might have to give you the point for this week because you're in the majority.
Yeah.
Who am I to fight against that?
Except as we've been pointing out, just that lots of people have said it doesn't make it true.
And it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called "One Big Beautiful Bill Is Not a Logical Fallacy." Because the House Republicans finally, after significant effort on Mike Johnson's part, passed what they've decided to call, because of their fealty to Trump, the One Big Beautiful Bill, which is his basically tax and spending package in which he taxes poor people, gives tax cuts to rich people, or maintains the tax cuts to rich people, and cuts important programs that benefit poor people. So basically just, it's the kind of the anti-Robin Hood bill, really, is what they should be calling it. But
it's the Sheriff of Nottingham bill.
But they're calling it One Big Beautiful Bill because he called it that once and decided it sounded nice. And they're not serious politicians.
Yeah.
Because it's a fucking stupid thing to call a law, like an act that is passed by Congress.
And also the contents of it are stupid things that ought not to be being dealt with by the government. The people should be objecting every turn.
Yeah. Initially, they couldn't get all the enough Republicans on board, because obviously all the Democrats were against it because it's stupid and awful.
Yeah.
But about 5 or 6 Republicans initially were against it because they're stupid and awful, and the bill wasn't stupid and awful enough for them, because they wanted more, like bigger cuts in Medicaid and things like that it wasn't doing.
Yeah.
And there have been a few Republicans who have held out actually for the right reasons, and I want to stress this may be the first time I've ever agreed with Josh Hawley on anything.
Oh my God.
He was anti-Medicaid cuts. He said they shouldn't cut Medicaid at all, and I agree with him. He's still a dick, but he didn't vote for this.
Yeah.
He might have voted for the final version of it because they made some changes at the last minute. But there were like 2 Republicans who didn't vote for it. One who I'd never heard of before. The other one might be Thomas Massey, who is also still crazy, but he didn't vote for it for the wrong reason instead of the Josh Hawley correct reason and the Democrat correct reason of not wanting to cut important spending like welfare programs for people who need those programs.
Right.
So ultimately what it meant was it did get passed late at night after some changes by 1 vote. And now it will have to go to the Senate and they won't like it.
Yeah.
Because they've already said there's various things in it that they don't like. So it will be changed. And the changes that the Senate makes will probably make the people who didn't like it initially and asked for changes in the House not like it, so they won't get that version passed in the House. So basically, it's still not getting through anytime soon.
Right.
Which is a good thing, because it's stupid and awful.
Yep.
But it passed the step that we didn't think it would, because we thought that Mike Johnson was so bad at his job that he wasn't even going to be able to
muster anybody.
Yeah. Because one thing he has proven very poor at is his job. And a big part of that is counting how many votes he has for a thing. So when he wants to get something passed, normally a House leader would not bring things up for a vote until they had the votes to pass it. Because otherwise they look like a fucking idiot. Because they keep bringing things up for votes that get voted down by their own party.
Yeah.
And people like Kevin McCarthy, who was not a great leader of any kind and didn't have the support of his House, typically didn't bring stuff up for a vote
if he knew unless he had the numbers.
Same with Paul Ryan.
Yeah,
even and you know, but based most House leaders of the past, they know that you know you talk to people, you figure out which way they're going to vote. When you've got enough votes to get it passed, then you bring it up for a vote, and it passes, and you look like you're doing a good job.
Yeah,
Mike Johnson has not learned that very simple lesson because he keeps bringing
all of
things
the work
up
first
that then get voted down.
Then go public.
And so he made a number of concessions over things over the course of several votes that led to it eventually getting passed. And it's such a delicate balance that they have that any changes that are made to it from this point are going to jeopardise that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the stuff that it does.
Stupid and awful things.
Stupid and awful things that it does. Well, first of all, it raises the deficit.
Yeah.
That's not part of its job. But it's the inevitable result of all of the things in the bill, according to the Congressional Budget Office analysis that was based on the kind of penultimate version of the bill before the changes were made to it that got it passed. It would have added $3.8 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years.
Wow.
Changes made in the final version probably put that up to closer to $5 trillion.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right. Didn't bring it down. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the thing that people weren't happy about.
Right.
Some people have said that's a bad thing.
But then they kind
Democrats
of said, but we got Doge cutting three. Didn't they say $3 trillion that they were going to
initially cut? He said 2. Then they changed their minds.
And then it's, you know.
But yeah, the massive increase in the deficit is obviously quite a bad thing. If they just kept all of Trump's rich person tax cuts, like if that was the only thing in the bill, then it wouldn't be as high as that. But there's other stuff in the bill that they're spending on. Things like, for example, the Golden Dome thing that he wants to do, the stupid missile defense system. And so to make sure it's only $3.8 to $5 trillion that it increases the deficit, they've had to cut some stuff because it would be irresponsible to cut taxes without also cutting some spending. And where they've decided to cut is vital services for poor people.
Yeah, because then there could be a lot more people will die. We'll have to take care of fewer people. They haven't thought about that fact that the people that then die won't be paying taxes.
Yeah, but they're poor people, so they probably don't pay much tax anyway.
Oh, no, that's right.
So that's fine.
Yeah, not like rich people who pay all of their tax that they're supposed to on all of their millions.
Yeah, so they're cutting Medicaid. They're slashing the Medicaid budget by nearly $700 billion.
Wow. Wow.
And increasing work requirements, or adding work requirements for certain Medicaid recipients who will be required to work at least 80 hours a month to retain their Medicaid benefits. Not all of them can work, so they will accept community service, school, or participating in a work program as a kind of alternative. That's acceptable.
Right.
And it doesn't apply to parents, pregnant women, medically frail individuals, and people with substance abuse disorders. So they're not, you know, they're not being mean. They're not running out for everyone.
They're not bastards. Yeah. No.
But out of the 71 million Americans who receive Medicaid or who get their health insurance through Medicaid, which is quite a lot, it will affect a significant number of those and will take hundreds of thousands of people essentially off the health insurance they get through Medicaid, probably killing many of them. That seems bad.
Because that was the thing they wanted to do, was do away with Obamacare and make something better. So the thing that he's made that's better is, well, we'll just have fewer people alive that we have to pay Medicaid to.
Yeah.
And how do we do that? Well, what we do is cut the personal independence payments. Oh, no, sorry, that's the UK.
So they're also cutting food stamps, $267 billion cut from the food stamp program. Some of the things that they're spending on, apart from the Golden Dome thing, they're also overhauling the air traffic control system, which is, to be fair, in need of an overhaul. And
well, according to many people Musk people have said,
the people who accept that some of the more recent problems with planes might be due to the number of people they fired, even those people say that actually it's a pretty old system and it does need an overhaul and it's kind of overdue for changing. So that if they do it well, that would be a good thing. But this is the Trump government, so
they're just going to give the money to Musk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only reason Musk got involved.
Yeah. They're also increasing child tax credit from $2,000 to $2,500 per child just during Trump's presidency, just from 2025 to 2028. Okay. It'll stop, I think, January 2029, just before whoever is next is inaugurated. So, because he wouldn't want anyone else to be able to take any credit for that or any benefit from it. That would be bad.
No.
Also, this is unbelievable. They're creating a new account for children born during Trump's presidency, specifically. Again, stops in January 2029.
Whoa.
And initially, in the first version, those accounts were called Money Account for Growth and Advancement, or MAGA accounts.
Yeah.
And that wasn't quite obsequious enough. So they changed the name to Trump accounts.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. Why not just call it that? Wow. That's bloody young pioneers, Hitler Youth. There, I said it. I've reverted to the reductio ad Hitlerum. Yeah, let's just have some Hitler Youth. But it's interesting because didn't he refuse to be drawn on whether people that were born in the US were US citizens?
No, he didn't refuse to be drawn on it. He says that they shouldn't be unless one of their parents is a US citizen.
Right.
He wants to repeal birthright citizenship.
And then he's going to fund a whole bunch of Trump youth.
Yeah, under this system, it says the federal government will provide a one-time $1,000 credit to the accounts of children born during his presidency who are US citizens at birth, which at the moment is children born in the US. I assume it's worded like that so that if they manage to repeal birthright citizenship, it won't count for anyone.
It would just be the people that they decide are US citizens.
Yeah.
Basically, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, white people.
Yeah. Yeah. Those ones.
Yeah.
So
the ones born in Midwich.
One of his campaign promises was no taxes on tips or overtime. And so that's in the bill.
Right.
That is arguably a good thing for some people.
That's kind of, it's almost a socialist kind of thing. That if Biden suggested that, wouldn't they have called that communism?
Yeah. There's the thing that most people who work on tips don't actually earn enough to pay taxes.
Anyway, yeah.
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 Because of the terrible, terrible wage problem in the US, where in most states, minimum wages take tips into account. So restaurant workers, for example, are allowed to be paid almost nothing per hour on the basis that they'll earn the minimum wage through their tips.
Tips.
So people who are doing that, who are in that position, are already not paying tax because they don't earn enough.
Because they're below the threshold, yeah.
There's also, because of the terrible, terrible labour system in the US, a huge number of people who do overtime who don't get paid for their overtime. They're just expected to do overtime, and if they don't, they're fired.
Yeah.
So they get paid for their standard work week. They get no holidays, or almost no holidays. They get very little paid parental leave, and they get forced to come in at weekends or stay late, and they aren't paid for that time. So that isn't benefiting them. A better system might mandate that overtime is paid, or that there is a minimum wage and taxes are on top of that.
And then,
you know, a federal minimum wage that is a livable wage would be a better system.
And then any tips on top of that, that's just tips.
If then you get tips gratuities. And those tips aren't taxed, great.
Aren't taxed.
Good system.
That would be pretty good,
So this will probably benefit some people, because there are some people who make enough tips or have a job that pays enough and then get tipped to pay taxes on it. The point is, where there are good things, they're not necessarily great. And there's not very many of the good things.
They could be better.
They're mostly bad things.
They're not. Yes. And the good things are, to quote Kemi Badenoch, not just a PR moment. They're not actually good for the national interest. They're for Trump to look good.
Yeah.
Because basically he's trying to grab as much money as he can in order to give it to his rich.
Yeah, absolutely. The main thing is that it benefits the rich people. Is that that's the kind of the headline of this whole bill. The Senate want various changes, or will want various changes. They've already said that there are things that they're not happy about it. First of all, they don't want to increase the deficit by that huge number. They want to
several trillions.
They're okay with like between 1.5 and 2 trillion increase in the deficit. That's fine. Most of them, at least. Some have said that they can kind of look at this and then go line by line through different things and see where else they can make cuts and they can kind of see what they can make work. But basically, the level that they've reached with the House bill probably isn't going to be acceptable to the majority of the Senate. The Medicaid thing is definitely going to be an issue for some people. Actually, I mentioned Josh Hawley. This is where I was getting confused. Josh Hawley's a senator, not a congressperson. So it wasn't that he was voting against the House bill. It's that he has specifically said he's not okay with Medicaid being cut when it comes to the Senate.
Right.
So among Republicans who specifically have said that Medicaid is not going to be on the table are Josh Hawley and Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, who have usually been more moderate in for the Republican Party. You know, they've been ones who are less keen to go full right wing, but they're usually able to be argued round in almost every case. Susan Collins particularly is one who expresses concern about just about everything and then votes the party line on pretty much everything. Lisa Murkowski sometimes has a bit more spine, but not usually. So we'll see. And Josh Hawley, I can't really see him being the one who we should look to save this, but hey.
But they've
all said Medicaid is off the table.
Just looked up what the current US national debt is, and it's $36 trillion at the moment.
Yeah, so they're looking to increase it to to over 40.
Meanwhile, the people at the up the top will be getting a tax cut.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. I mean, this the way this has worked out, it means that poor families will be paying more than a grand more in taxes per year,
right.
Which will go up over time.
Right.
Because it's built up that way. It's like set to change the rates over time. And the richest Americans will be, you know, hundreds of thousands richer because they will have much lower taxes to pay on their wealth. So, yeah. It's entirely built that way. One of the other things that House Republicans did or agreed on that the Senate isn't happy about is business tax cuts, which the business tax cuts that happened under Trump, kind of essentially corporation tax, we would call it in the UK, but it's, the tax on your business profits. They are restoring those from Trump's first term, essentially, but only for a short period of time, 4 or 5 years. And that was a way to keep the deficit down, because if they continued it for the full 10 years, then that would balloon the deficit
that
even further.
Well.
And the Senate, who are keen to keep the deficit lower, also want those business tax cuts to be permanent, because they're Senate Republicans, so they're friends with many rich business people. So that's good for business. It's good corporate taxes.
Yeah.
So basically, what I'm saying is there
trickle
is
trickle down economics.
The thing that they've passed, which I'm a little surprised they managed to pass, is bad.
Yeah.
But it isn't the law yet. It isn't going to get through. The Senate's going to change it. The House won't like the changes. There's going to be lots of negotiation. A lot of it's going to be in bad faith. And eventually we'll probably get something shit, but maybe not as shit as the thing we've currently got.
Because there are sufficient numbers of people that are not liking the Medicaid cut.
There are people who are staunchly on both sides of this being wrong. Like, that it isn't as bad in various ways as it should be, and it is worse in those ways than it should be, depending on who you talk to. And they have to come to some kind of compromise. So
if the
Senate and House can find something they all agree on or are prepared to hold their nose and vote for, then something eventually will happen. But in the meantime, Trump will be complaining and threatening to primary people who
just
don't
agree
with
him. Just
shut
down the whole thing. Just put it through, because he's being manipulated by the puppet of rich people who want an America whereby people can't afford to vote Democrat, or the people that vote Democrat are dead because they've cut all the funding for them, etc.
I'm not sure he cares in that amount of detail about how it works.
He just make it work.
Yeah.
Just get on with it.
Just so that he can say he did it, basically. That's what he wants. I don't think he cares what's in the bill. So long as he can say he passed his one big beautiful bill, then he'll be happy.
Yeah. It contains all of the things that I don't even know what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kept people that are likely to keep paying him money when he's no longer president and he has massive legal bills happy. Well, we'll wait with bated breath. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Trump went on a jolly to the Middle East this month and claims he came home with over $2 trillion of great deals. A couple of days later, as is typical with Trump, the number he made up got even bigger, claiming in a Rose Garden press conference that they gave us a nice contribution of about $5 trillion. In case you're wondering, he didn't get a late phone call from a Saudi prince saying, oh, we forgot to mention, we'd like another $3 trillion worth of unspecified American stuff, please. He's just lying. He was lying about the $2 trillion as well, so why not pretend it's five, I guess? To get to that number, he included some deals that were in place before he won the election in November, quite a lot of vague promises rather than signed deals, some numbers that were just made up, and one cloud computing contract between Amazon and the UAE, which was worth $1 billion but was included in the calculations as $181 billion because that's how much Amazon estimated the UAE could increase its GDP by using more cloud services. That one also was announced in October. One thing Trump did get from the trip was a massive bribe from Qatar in the shape of a luxury jet worth $400 million. Even some Republicans think that's a bit dodgy, but the Trump administration say it's fine, because Attorney General Pam Bondi says it's okay, and it's a gift for the country, not Donald himself. Plus, Boeing are taking ages to deliver the new Air Force Ones they promised, so this will do in the meantime. Those arguments aren't especially convincing, given that Pam Bondi is a former paid lobbyist for Qatar who took a bribe from Trump to stop looking into his scam university in Florida. The country doesn't get the plane because it will go to Trump's presidential library when his term ends, rather than being used by future presidents. And the Boeing Air Force Ones are due in 2027, and experts suggest retrofitting this plane to make it a secure flying fortress like Air Force One will take several years and around $1 billion taxpayer dollars. So it's just a luxury gift from a country with a horrible human rights record, who he will now speak about in the most glowing of terms, because they gave him a shiny thing. A shiny thing worth 100 times the value of every other presidential gift from foreign nations combined since 2001.
Wow. And he did he not, go on a rant about either Obama or Clinton accepting a gift from the UAE because of their terrible human rights.
What, but back record? In the day?
Back like, in
yeah,
the day.
Yeah, 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 he did. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was before they gave him a big plane.
Well, yeah, exactly. Nice big shiny thing, because they know how to work him.
Absolutely.
Big orange man with lifts in his shoes and walking like the front end of a pantomime horse. Yeah, yeah, they know exactly how to play him.
Incidentally, it's a 13-year-old plane that they've been trying to get rid of for years and couldn't sell. So,
because it's cheaper, so it's cheaper to give it away.
Yeah, they've palmed the plane off on Trump rather than giving him a gift.
And because he's got all the taste and nous of the perfect deal maker, he just went, "Oh, shiny thing!"
Yeah,
and his little eyes lit up, and most of his face. Yeah, remember all those gritty 70s and 80s sci-fi movies involving hard done by lowly blue collar heroes, downtrodden members of a future dystopian society having to fight each other, the city, the elements, or aging in an attempt to remain within and possibly ascend to the higher echelons. Most of them featured Arnie or Kurt or Carradine or Jenny Agata with very few clothes on, and mostly involved wielding, driving, or riding things with spikes attached to them. Well, never one to shy away from rehashing outdated formats, Trump's Department of Homeland Security is reviewing a reality TV pitch where immigrants would compete for American citizenship. Producer Rob Worsoff has stated that the idea would be a love letter to America and not punching down non-contestants at all. Worsoff said he envisions his show being like The Biggest Loser for immigration, referencing the former reality show where overweight contestants competed to see who would lose the most weight whilst calling them an assortment of fat-shaming names. But he insisted, after having possibly listened to what the words he just said sounded like, there's nobody who loses on this show. It's ridiculous to even suggest otherwise. Each episode would include a heritage challenge tailored to specific locations, a gold rush challenge in San Francisco, for example, or a pizza challenge in New York, or a NASA challenge in Florida to showcase how cool America is. There'd also be an elimination challenge, and each episode would end with a town hall meeting, just like in a presidential election. So I think that means there'll be as much cheating allowed as you can manage, you know, like running pedestrians over for more points, bribing hookers to keep quiet, using money that other people gave you, and lying about talking to people to get you more votes. Whilst not acknowledging it would be possibly utterly demeaning for ordinary people seeking refuge and asylum at the invitation of Lady Liberty, Worsoff did acknowledge the stakes would be high for the contestants. I would hope that any competition reality show has stakes. Yeah, I'm not going to apologise for that. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. It's heartless enough for Trump to claim all the credit, dressed as James Caan on the fake cover of Variety, having won an artificial Emmy for it.
Some of Trump's worst public moments seem to be his public meetings with other world leaders in the White House. He and Vance looked like petulant children next to Zelensky. He fawned over Bukele because he likes dictators. Mark Carney made him look stupid just by existing in the same room. And last week, he met with South African President Cyril Ramaphosa and spent a good chunk of their time amplifying white supremacist lies about white genocide in South Africa. He claimed that white farmers are being murdered in the thousands and, as proof, held up a printed out photo from the Democratic Republic of Congo and showed a video of crosses and earthen mounds which he claimed were mass graves but was actually a part of a protest that followed the murder of two people. It's not clear where he got these ideas from. On an unrelated note, South African-born Elon Musk was in the room at the time, and his homegrown AI chatbot, Grok, has recently been telling people about claims of the white genocide in South Africa. That's not so weird, you might think. People like Tucker Carlson, and by people I mean white supremacists, talk about it. So perhaps people ask Grok if it's real. But no, Grok is telling people about it even if the question they ask is completely unrelated, like how many times has HBO Max changed their name? An official statement from Twitter blamed an unauthorized modification from a rogue employee. They didn't name the employee, but I'll give you one guess who I think it was.
Meanwhile, determined to do something about finding a mate for the worm in his brain, perhaps, and possibly ensuring the future sterility of his grandchildren, RFK Jr. went on a Make America Healthy Again hike for Mother's Day in Dumbarton Oaks Park in Washington, D.C. He added that he and his grandchildren took a swim in nearby Rock Creek, a highly Instagrammable, if utterly contaminated, waterway, where swimming and even wading are prohibited by the National Park Service due to high levels of bacteria. According to the New York Times, Rock Creek, which flows through much of northwest Washington, is used to drain excess sewage and stormwater during rainfall. The creek has widespread fecal contamination and high levels of bacteria, including E. coli, and the city has banned swimming in all of its waterways for more than 50 years because of the widespread contamination of Rock Creek and other nearby rivers. Perhaps he thinks he's just waging a one-man war on health woke. We used to eat dirt and drink from the hosepipe and wipe our noses with our sleeves, but when it comes to the inevitable, and it didn't do us any harm, that's where we, as the rest of the human race will, given our observations of you, you freaking idiot, have to part ways, I'm afraid, Bob. Still, if you want to go removing a generation or so of Kennedys from the gene pool, and if they're anything like you, you go right ahead and show us how safe it all is. Have you not seen Toxic Avenger, for Christ's sakes? Ah, perhaps he thought it was a documentary.
On May 15th, the Huffington Post reported that, in a break from recent precedent, the Trump White House is not consistently releasing transcripts of the president's remarks, interviews and speeches, noting that perhaps they're trying to avoid having some of his more unhinged comments on public view. In fact, of 146 public speeches or interactions with journalists in his first 100 days, only 29 were transcribed on the remarks page of whitehouse.gov. Being actual journalists, they asked the White House why, and being an actual asshole, White House Communications Director Stephen Chung said in part, "You must be truly fucking stupid if you think we're not transparent. The president regularly does multiple press engagements per day and they're streamed live on multiple platforms." Chung demanded his statement be published in full, but fuck you, Stephen, you're not the boss of me. Anyway, the White House took note of the concern over the lack of transcripts available to the American public, and within a week, they took all but one of the rest of them down and replaced them with a curated selection of around 48 videos of Trump speeches, claiming the change is part of an effort to maintain consistency. J.D. Vance's office, meanwhile, continues to put out transcripts of his remarks, presumably because videos would make too many people die of cringe.
June 14th this year is Donald Trump's 250th birthday. It's the anniversary of the establishment of him in 1775 ahead of the Declaration of Independence. It's also the US Army's 79th birthday. As we know, the US Army wants to be seen to be a strong force, a powerful force, very powerful, so strong around the world, something akin to the might of Russia, North Korea, or China. As a young septuagenarian, though, the US Army is not so old, feeble and stupid to actually go through with staging some sort of Soviet-era Stalinesque fascist Mussolini parade to display just how great his cojones are. Trump, however, as a wrinkled, sallow-skinned, shallow duodecim centenarian, is tantruming in the aisles of the White House until he gets to show all the dangerous weapons the US has under his command on the street playmat he thinks he's laid out for him in D.C. The festival celebrating the army had been in the planning for more than a year, featuring displays of military equipment, musical performances, and a fitness competition on the National Mall. Then, 2 months ago, Trump got involved. And now a parade is on the cards. Of course, having cut all the welfare and environmental agencies, he can afford to spend the estimated tens of billions of dollars required to trundle big things past Trump's bigly, smugly and podium face. And as pointed out by the mayor of the District of Columbia, Muriel Bowser, repair the torn up urban streets of downtown Washington. Last time the big baby was in office, his parade got canned because of the $92 million cost. But now that Musk has all but disappeared from view, Doge's waste catchers won't try and stop him wasting taxpayers' money. As Jimmy Fallon alluded to, Musk also, of course, will want to parade some of the most dangerous and explosive vehicles that Trump helped sell, self-driving Tesla taxis.
Shit-swimming bear prankster RFK Jr. continued to aggressively pretend science isn't real if it disagrees with his political views this week when he directed the FDA to review the regulations around the abortion pill mifepristone. He claimed this is necessary due to new data, which must be pretty explosive given that more than 100 scientific studies have already found it to be safe and effective. And when I say explosive, I mean the cool new definition of explosive you probably haven't heard of. When the kids say explosive these days, they mean not peer-reviewed, not published in a medical journal, and full of massive methodological flaws. The paper in question was written by the head of a right-wing think tank, which is probably using the word think a bit generously. Among complications it claims are due to mifepristone is ectopic pregnancy, where an embryo implants outside of the uterus, most commonly in the fallopian tubes. Jennifer Lincoln, a board-certified obstetrics and gynecology physician in Oregon, pointed out, pills can't move your pregnancy out of your uterus and into your fallopian tubes. And I'll be honest, I'm not sure we needed an expert for that one. It's worth noting that Project 2025 advocates revoking mifepristone's approval altogether. We don't know if that's going to happen, but I think it's worth mentioning at this point that mifepristone is currently still legally available in many states and it has a 2-year shelf life.
Despite all the moaning by the Tories about the cutting of the winter fuel allowance for those pensioners who could well afford it, when Keir Starmer this week said he would restore it, Kerry Badenoch said in Prime Minister's question, when will he answer the question of restoring the winter fuel allowance? Starmer pointed out, he already had. And Kemi later went on to say she cannot commit to fully reversing the Labour government's cuts, explaining, well, I can't just say, oh, I'll reverse every single thing they've done. Nigel Farage, of course, had no such compunctions. Yeah, I'd restore the whole thing and do away with the child benefit cap while I'm at it. And just before we thought Farage was out lefting the Labour Party, he added that he'd pay for it by closing hotels for migrants, just in case Reform voters thought they were communists suddenly. Meanwhile, the former Blackpool Conservative Club has rebranded itself as the country's first Reform pub. Carling export is £2.60 a pint. That's fellow Brexiteer Boozer Weatherspoons type prices. But of course, that foreign muck, Stella, Madry and Cruz Campo are priced at a comparatively eye-watering £4.50. Raymond Head, 86, drove 200 miles from Labour-controlled Stevenage after he saw the pub on GB News. Stevenage has been Labour-controlled since 1974. So Raymond, can I call you Dick? Head must have been quite thirsty. He said, I thought if I'm going to support anyone, I want to support this guy. I want to come and have a drink here. It's cheap, it's cheerful. We all talk very much the same language. Perhaps the same can't be said of the Take That tribute act that will be there in August, all the way from Benidorm, which is possibly where Farage was holidaying when Starmer basked in the possible glory of his Brexit reset. Meanwhile, his Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is coming under fire from at least 42 MPs in the Labour Party, protesting that cutting the personal independence payment living allowance from the disabled community ought perhaps be replaced by doing something a bit more socialist, like taxing the very rich a bit higher on their 11th million, possibly restoring the 50p top tax rate and increasing capital gains tax rates to align with income tax. This is estimated to bring in £12 billion, whereas the OBR estimates the PIP cut will only save £3.4 billion. Given my theory that we have had unbroken Tory policies enacted upon us since 1979, it's no surprise that when I heard you don't know whether you can go back to exactly where you were before, I didn't know if it was Kemi Badenoch or Rachel Reeves speaking.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our straw man level patron Chuck Gray, Mike Smith, LT, Colin Lyela, Richard Thunder Hopkins, Will M, Scott, Mark Reiki, and Amber Buchanan, who told us when we met her at QED we could just call her Amber. And last year at QED I met the listener who recognised her at QED the year before because we kept using her full name all the time. And our true Scotsman level patrons Renee Z, Melissa Sitek, Stephen Bickle, Janet Uetta, Andrew Houck, and our top patron Kaz Tui. Thank you so much for your continued patronage. Really is very, very much appreciated. Thank you.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump or in the Discord at fallacioustrump.com/discord.
All music is by The Outburst and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.